Welcome to Creating Sanctuary, a global interview series featuring 21 heroes who are saving animals' lives. I'm your host, Yolanda Calderon, and the hero I'm interviewing today is Karen Davis. She's the PhD founder and president of United Poultry Concerns, a nonprofit that promotes the compassionate and respectful treatment of chickens, turkeys, ducks, and other domestic fowl. In 2002, Karen was inducted into the National Animal Rights Hall of Fame for outstanding contributions to animal liberation. Welcome, Karen. I am so glad that I got introduced to you.
Same here, Yolanda. I'm delighted to be on your show, and thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you. So first of all, could you tell us a little bit about United Poultry Concerns, how it got started, and what your main focus is?
Yes, absolutely. I started United Poultry Concerns in 1990 to promote the compassionate and respectful treatment of chickens, turkeys, ducks, and other domesticated fowl. This was a time when very little attention was yet being given to farmed animals. And I learned a great deal as one of the first volunteers at Farm Sanctuary, which was then located in a little place in Pennsylvania, where I worked for 6 weeks one summer, I believe it was 1987. And I got to know chickens and ducks and turkeys and pigs and cows and goats in a way that I had never, ever done before, because I had not grown up with those animals. Mm-hmm. And I was particularly drawn to the birds because I've always had a deep affinity for birds. And so when I met chickens and turkeys, I was really just enchanted by them. Anyway, I did a lot of reading through the 1980s about the plight of farmed animals, and I really educated myself. And that reading, in addition to my work at Farm Sanctuary, led me to want to start an organization that would focus attention on the largest number of abused land animals used in farming, which are chickens. They mm-hmm. represent 9 out of the 10 total number of land animals raised and slaughtered for food each year in the United States alone. So at the time, in the late 1980s, when I was considering starting this organization, I was encouraged by some people in our movement, but there were others who advised me that I would never be able to sustain an organization that was focused on chickens. It was said that we can't even get people to care about whales. How do you think you're ever going to get people to care about chickens? And mm-hmm. my response to that concern was that as an advocate, my job is to get people to care about chickens and turkeys and other domestic fowl, to not simply abandon them because of a belief that no one will ever care about them, which is not true at all, but to become a creative source of knowledge and compassion among people that will help to change the perception and the fate of these birds, which is what mm-hmm. I have been doing now for, 28 years.
Wonderful. Yeah, just because that's the way things have always been done does not mean that that's the way things always have to be done in the future, right?
Exactly.
We can change our perspective, and we've changed it on so many other things. And I've seen an evolution in how people see chickens.
Really?
Definitely. I have.
I'm
absolutely
glad.
You haven't?
No, I'm glad that you have. No,
yeah.
I can truthfully say that it's a long slog to try to change society's views of animals that most people still want to eat. But at the same time, I know that our organization, working with other groups and individuals, has made a huge difference in the way many people view these birds. And many people, as I learned when I started United Poultry Concerns in 1990, actually do care about chickens. They just didn't mm-hmm. know that anybody else cared about chickens. So one of the values of our organization is to create a core organization that validates those views that do respect and care about and even love chickens. So, yes, I mean, our job is to find the ways to reach people, to reach their consciousness and their conscience, and to bring about change, which is what we're doing.
Exactly. And so I know that you have a large educational program, and people get to at least meet the animals, but how is the farmed animal sanctuary different from like a petting zoo, for example?
Well, a petting zoo is a place where animals are brought in from who knows where, and they are there more or less as exhibits for people with their children to come and visit, sometimes to pet the animals. In some cases, animals will be encouraged to give birth in front of members of the public, which is a very inappropriate thing to force animals to do in the public sphere. But a petting zoo is a commercial enterprise, and it's an exploitative enterprise. And when the animals become sick, they're not going to receive veterinary care. And when the animals are not attractive anymore, or any number of reasons will cause a petting zoo, like all zoos of whatever size or whatever animals they happen to collect and exhibit, when the animals are no longer turning a profit or interesting people, then they will just get rid of them. In the case of chickens, they probably just break their necks and throw them in the trash, or send them to a slaughterhouse. So I know from my experience of, for example, one such zoo in Northern Virginia, that the conditions behind the scenes are really atrocious. And it's a completely pitiless attitude, really, once the animals are no longer deemed to be profitable or attractive, or they're too old, or they get sick or whatever, they're destroyed one way or the other. So a sanctuary, a good sanctuary, would never keep animals only as exhibits. A good sanctuary would not even think of not providing veterinary care. A good sanctuary would not, quote-unquote, get rid of animals who were no longer attracting visitors. In short, we do not treat animals as objects, and our animals are not for profit. We do what we can as a sanctuary, in common with other good sanctuaries, to create a home for animals who have been neglected, abused, and so on, that will allow them to experience and express their own interests, their own desires, as freely as possible within the confines of our obligation to protect them, but to try as little as possible to control them.
Mm-hmm. That's clear that a petting zoo is just for the people and the sanctuary is for the animals. So how do you provide public education within the sanctuary and make sure that the animals are protected and the people have a positive experience?
Well, we do invite people by appointment to visit our sanctuary for usually 2-hour visits. We invite them to the sanctuary to meet our chickens. Right now we don't have any turkeys, though we have in the past, but they died of either illness derived from their previous terrible experiences, or they just got old, and the point is they died here. We didn't send them off to a slaughterhouse or anything like that. People come here. They can walk around with our chickens and our ducks, and we also have one peacock. And our birds are very fortunately inside a totally outdoor but enclosed aviary. So they are free from predators, and we make a point to our visitors that we are able to let our birds be out and about. They're under trees, they're scratching in the soil, they have bushes. They have as close to a natural habitat suited to their needs and their nature as we can possibly provide. They're outside all day long. They go into their little houses at night, and we keep them very comfortable. And so we seek to educate people about who these birds are, that is, who they evolved to be. In the case of chickens, they evolved in the tropical forests of Asia, And despite domestication and all of the different things that humans have done to debilitate chickens and other birds to fit them into farming paradigms, what we see at our sanctuary and what we show to visitors is the extent to which these birds are the same as their wild ancestors and contemporary wild relatives, how much they love to scratch in the soil for exploration and to find food, how much they love to perch in tree branches, how much they love to break up into little groups and sunbathe together and dust bathe together, and how exuberant they are and how cheerful they are and how interested they are in just about every little thing that comes along. So one of the nice things about chickens is that they're busy all day. They're very active. And when people visit our sanctuary, many are surprised to see that they like to get up into a tree branch. They thought that since they had been domesticated for food, therefore they no longer had any of their instincts to perch in a tree branch or do all of the things that they would normally do if they had not been genetically altered to some extent for specific food traits, which in the case of chickens and turkeys and ducks would be either for egg production or meat production. So we try to help people to see the chickens for who they are, both in terms of their evolution, in terms of what they actually do, their behavior during a normal day in the sanctuary. And people are just enchanted, usually as I was when I first encountered chickens in farm sanctuary, to see how sweet and innocent and lively and vibrant these birds are when they're enjoying their lives.
Absolutely, and how much personality they have.
Oh, they do. And I love to tell the story of how Ira Glass of This American Life visited our sanctuary a number of years ago, and he met our chickens. I actually challenged him to come down and meet our chickens, and he did that. And he was subsequently on the David Letterman late night show, in which he described how visiting and meeting our chickens turned him into a vegetarian. So,
wonderful.
And the video is on our website. Anybody can just click it on and watch it. It's a wonderful little segment of David Letterman talking with Ira Glass about Karen Davis's chicken sanctuary. And the thing is that, you know, this is kind of symbolic of how people will visit the sanctuary, meet the chickens, and you never know what their takeaway is. But you can assume that in many cases, their views are changed or their views are enhanced by having actually seen the chickens and how they behave and how well they get along with one another when they're happy.
That's wonderful. I'm going to look up the Ira Glass on David Letterman show, definitely. So where do your animals come from and how do you rescue them?
Well, our birds over the years have come from a number of sources. First of all, we're located in one of the largest chicken-producing regions of the United States, what's known as the Delmarva Peninsula. It comprises the eastern shore of Virginia, where we're located, the eastern shore of Maryland, and all of Delaware. And this region prides itself on being what it calls the birthplace of the broiler chicken industry. So this is an area where at any given time over a half a billion chickens are living in total confinement buildings full of filth and pollution and absolute misery. So our sanctuary is located in this chicken region, a chicken production region of the country. So a number of our chickens through the years have come from, let's say, falling off trucks when the chickens fall out of the transport crates on their way to the slaughterhouses. We have also taken in many chickens over the years who have come from the egg industry. Various things have happened where, for example, one year at an egg company called Cypress Foods, based in, at the time, Georgia and Florida, went bankrupt, and they just abandoned many millions of hens in battery cages to starve. And while most of the birds, when they were finally discovered, did starve to death, a miserable death in their cages, we did manage to help rescue several hundred of those birds, and about 50 of them came to our sanctuary. We paid to have them brought to our sanctuary. And we have a beautiful image that we use a lot in our literature and on our website, showing a number of these hens beautifully situated in a very large bush here in our sanctuary yard, just showing that even though before they came here, they had never known anything but life in a cage. And yet, as soon as they landed in an environment that spoke to them as chickens, with trees and bushes and soil and all of that, they immediately recognized the kind of a world that they were meant to live in. And so we have this beautiful picture that was taken by a sanctuary helper of several of these chickens sitting in the tree branches, in the branches of this great big glorious bush. And I always kind of compared them to magnolia blossoms, because they look like the magnolia blossoms that we see down here in Virginia in all the shining, beautiful leaves of the magnolia trees. So anyway, we do many things to try to help people to see these birds in the many different aspects. But to answer your question more completely, our birds have come either from the so-called broiler or meat chicken background, as well as the turkey industry, or from the egg production industry. In some cases, people have simply been unable to continue caring for their birds, either because they became ill or they became too old, or maybe the zoning would not allow them to keep their birds. So they ended up bringing their birds to our sanctuary. We recently took in four ducks who had been rescued from a hoarding situation in Virginia. And because we have a good relationship with an animal advocacy organization at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville, one of the students contacted me and said, could you possibly take in these four ducks? So about a month ago, Belle, this student, brought the four ducks to our sanctuary, and they're out there splashing around in their pools right now, enjoying themselves. They get along really well with the chickens and with our peacock frankincense. So, in short, we've gotten our birds from a variety of sources, usually neglect and abuse, but in some cases the birds have been treated well, but just were unable to continue being kept by the people who owned them. We've also gotten a number of chickens through the years from school hatching projects, which we have a whole campaign opposing. And so that's been another source.
Excellent. You know, you started talking about how many chickens are in battery cages right now. And I was wondering, I hope I'm not catching you off guard too much, but every time I hear the statistics of how many chickens are being slaughtered just in the U.S. every year, I just think, how could this possibly be? Do you have off the top of your head the numbers of how many chickens like are in battery cages for egg laying, or how many chickens actually get slaughtered for food every year?
Well, roughly speaking, Yolanda, it varies slightly from year to year, but on average, there are between 8 billion and 9 billion meat chickens. I hate using that type of term, but meat or broiler chickens slaughtered for food in the United States, according to U.S. Department of Agriculture statistics. There are, at any given time, about 350 million hens in battery cages, or in some form of confinement known as cage-free, where the hens are totally confined, they're very crowded, but they aren't literally in wire cages. Mm-hmm. So, by far, the largest number is the chickens who are being bred and raised and slaughtered for meat, for, you know, chicken breasts and chicken wings and all of that kind of stuff. I mean, they represent far and away the largest number of land animals. In fact, their number is only exceeded by the number of aquatic animals.
I cannot even fathom that 8 to 9 billion chickens every year just for food. That is like the whole human population of the world every year in chickens that we
And that's just in this country, in the United States.
That's
not the billions and countless billions throughout the world. Right now, our planet is blanketed with avian souls, incarcerated avian souls with chickens. The chicken houses down here on the Eastern Shore alone, this very tiny peninsula, there are 6,000 chicken houses, all sealed up, 600-foot-long chicken houses. If you drove by them and you didn't know what you were looking at, you would just think they were warehouses with some type of objects in them or abandoned or something. But this is just right here in the mid-Atlantic states where there are over, as I said, over a half a billion incarcerated chickens at any given time and over 6,000 chicken houses. And Tyson and Purdue and other big corporations are adding more of these chicken houses down here all the time. And this is happening on a global scale. Mm. And it's all because consumers are purchasing chicken products. I mean, that's the source of the problem. So people who really care about chickens and really want to help them need to start by removing chicken products from their diet and, of course, egg products, all animal products.
So, yeah, I'm just taking those numbers in. And, you know, each one of these, of course, is a sentient being. And it's really difficult sometimes to imagine all of that. So my question to you is, how do you keep inspired when you are confronted with these numbers or when you think about these numbers? What keeps you going?
Well, Yolanda, I get asked that question pretty frequently. You know, how do you keep going day after day with all this knowledge of all this misery and how huge and hopeless it seems to be? And my answer to that is very simple. I get up every day and get to work. Okay, if I just thought and thought and thought about this situation, I don't think I'd even still be here. but getting up and having to craft action alerts, putting together our quarterly magazine, Poultry Press, which I'm just now finishing up for the next issue, and writing articles and books, and being with our birds, actually stepping outside and being with our birds, they themselves remind me of what my work is about and what I'm fighting for and who I'm fighting for. So it's the actual birds in our sanctuary, and it's simply that every day I get up and I get to work on their behalf. So it's sort of turning how you feel into crafting projects on their behalf. And when you have to craft or create a project, then you kind of switch gears in your mind. Now you have to put together something that communicates information and ideas to other people's minds. And you have to, you know, now you're actively working as opposed to only feeling bad. And I feel very bad and sad all the time about what I know about what these birds are going through. But I do my best to transform the sadness and the grief and the anger and the outrage that I feel into productive work.
Beautiful. Thank you for doing that. So I know you mentioned getting chicken off people's plates. What is one small step that people could start taking now to help alleviate this?
Well, you just said it. You know, get the chickens off your plate. I believe that we have to live according to the dictum that let there be peace and let it begin with me. It shouldn't stop with me, but it's got to start with me. It's got to start with how we choose to interact with these birds and, by extension, all animals, all fellow animals, in our own daily lives. And we can't be telling other people that they should do this or that when we haven't first made a dietary change, which is a moral change in our own lives. And we can't assume that the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the Food and Drug Administration, Tyson Foods, Purdue Farms, and all of these government agencies, which are all in alliance with the huge corporations, we can't expect them to want to institute welfare reforms, so-called welfare reforms, when they don't even care about the birds, when we ourselves, who claim to care about them, won't even make a change in our own relationship to them through our food choices. So
Absolutely.
In answer to your question, I urge people to go animal-free as far as their diet is concerned. And I really mm-hmm. like the term animal-free. I use the term vegan, too, without apology. But I also like the term animal-free because it puts the animal back in what can otherwise be a discussion of merely food and cuisine. And we want people to be reminded that we're talking about animals here, and we're talking about freeing them from food, to free all of us, really, because we're animals, too. And so I like to talk about animal-free food. You know, it's not meatless Monday. It's not eggless omelets. I don't like L-E-S-S. I don't like less, because who wants to have less, you know?
Right.
you want to make it sound like a positive thing, which it is. So I like the word free. I do want to say one other thing quickly, if I may, about how we reach people through our sanctuary. And that mm-hmm. is, in addition to people visiting our birds and actually walking around and being with them and holding them in some cases, et cetera, the Internet has provided a magnificent opportunity for us and for other sanctuaries to bring the sanctuary and its inhabitants to people who may never actually be able to literally visit a sanctuary. Because now we all have our websites and our Facebook pages, we have our videos, and we can use the Internet to educate so many people through our photographs and our wonderful videos. And we have such a great opportunity with a sanctuary, both literally and through the Internet channels available to us, to challenge the lies and the misinformation that the industries seek to perpetrate upon the public, to think that, for example, chickens are happier in confinement and they're no longer suited to be able to live outdoors and they become hysterical if they encounter a blade of grass and that they're contented to have what they call 3 square meals a day in a battery cage or in a filthy confinement building. All of these things that the industry will do to try to persuade the public that these animals have been bred for a life of confinement and that they're happy in confinement and that they don't dust bathe in the case of chickens and turkeys, too. That they don't dust bathe anymore. They don't sunbathe. They don't want to walk around. I mean, all of that is just complete poppycock. And so we can use our sanctuaries to challenge through visual evidence the view that these birds and other animals have become so denatured through genetic engineering that they no longer mind living in horrific conditions in order to become an object on somebody's dinner plate.
One of the most impactful things that I've seen on the Internet was a wonderful little video of a duck greeting a person and giving them a hug. And honestly, you know, I'm an animal person, but I didn't realize that they had that amount of emotion in them. And so to see that was really, it really cracked something open in me.
I know. And see, we want people to see this kind of an image because people, as you describe, people are surprised. People are just now slowly learning, and we're helping to educate them about the fact that these animals, and I'm going to just sort of confine myself to birds right now, but by extension, mm-hmm. all animals, but certainly these birds, these chickens and turkeys and ducks, they are very, very emotional beings. They are full mm-hmm. of feelings. And when you live with them and you have an interpersonal relationship with them and you observe them and you listen to their voices, you will be transformed in your understanding of who they are. They're not just these automatons just bumping around. They are full of feelings. They have all kinds of communications amongst one another. And as well as ducks, I can tell you that chickens will oftentimes, they will walk right up to you, and I've had this happen with me, and they will just bury their little faces right in your neck, and you can pet their backs and stroke them. And, you know, a number of years ago, the Washington Post did a wonderful profile of me and United Poultry Concerns in an article called For the Birds. And I was so happy that this article by the Washington Post reporter Tamara Jones ended with a story that I told her about one of our hens named Sonia, and how one day I was very upset and I was crying. And it was actually in our living room when we were still up in Maryland, and Sonia lived in the house. And she was a big, white, beautiful hen from, you know, the Purdue Tyson background. And she was really friendly, and she was always happy. And so I was very distressed this day, and I sat down on the floor, and I just started crying. And Sonia walked over to me, and she just buried her head in my neck and started purring. Many people don't know that a chicken has a lovely little purr when they're very contented or when they want to express, I guess you'd call it, a soothing emotion. And I was so comforted by Sonia, and I don't believe that she knew why I was upset. But she knew that I was upset, and she sought to comfort me, and she did. I have many stories. On our website, I have an essay that I published a number of years ago called The Social Life of Chickens. And what I do in that essay is simply provide anecdotal experiences of chickens in our sanctuary, both hens and roosters, that help to evoke their lives for people, rather than citing this scientist and that scientist, et cetera, which I've certainly done in a number of other articles. But in this particular essay, I want to evoke the lives of chickens I know and have known, and some of the things that they have done or expressions they have shown that make it clear that these birds are alive, they are feeling, they have sensations and emotions of all kinds. They can be sad, they can be very cheerful. They have a range of emotions, I'm sure, way beyond what I am even able to apprehend. And I will just give one more very quick example. We had a beautiful, large, glossy black hen named Mavis, who came to us from some kind of an exhibitor at agricultural shows. She came with about four other hens. And these four hens, I don't think that the owner had ever even made eye contact with them before. They had just lived in individual cages. So they ended up at a humane society in Virginia someplace. And the Humane Society learned about United Poultry Concerns and contacted me and asked if we would be able to adopt these hens into our sanctuary. So they ended up coming here. And there was one hen in particular of these four, all big, beautiful, black, glossy hens with the most beautiful, melancholy eyes. And this particular hen, one day, well, we had three white so-called broiler hens. And these hens loved for me to crouch down and hug all three of them at the same time. And they would all vie with each other to get as close to me as possible. They would all kind of bump each other out of the way, not in an aggressive way, but just in a really, you know, very sweet way. They each wanted to get
puppies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I would have my arms around them, embracing all of them at the same time. And so one day I was doing this, and I looked up, and there was Mavis just stock still, just watching us do this. And I you know, at first I thought, well, I wonder what she thinks of all this. And it suddenly occurred to me that I think Mavis wants me to go over there and hug her. And so I carefully extracted myself from the three Graces, as I called them, the three white hens, and I went over to Mavis, and I crouched down, and I pulled her toward me, and she just like collapsed into my arms. And that's what she wanted. She wanted to be physically held and embraced, like I was doing with those three white hens. And I felt, and I wrote that it seemed to me that not only was she grateful to have that physical contact that she wanted so badly, but I thought she was also relieved that what she wanted and was trying to communicate to me was understood. So I've had so many experiences with chickens and with turkeys, just showing that they are so alert, they're so aware, they're so conscious, they have such feelings about their lives and about what's happening around them, and they have very strong drives and desires, just like us. They really are members of animal kingdom of life, which includes ourselves. And when people say, oh, well, you're just anthropomorphizing, this is a subject I've written about extensively. Well, first of all, we are related to chickens and other animals through our evolutionary heritage. So it is quite reasonable that we can draw meaningful and reasonable conclusions through our interactions with and our observations of our fellow beings, including birds. And secondly, I remind people that the poultry industry, for example, thinks nothing of blandly stating that chickens and turkeys are happy and contented being confined on factory farms. And yet, if we turn around and say they're miserable, then they say, oh, you're just being anthropomorphic. You're just imposing how you feel on these birds. But there are so many ways that a bird, just like a human being, has of communicating whether they're happy or sad, whether they're feeling good or whether they're in a condition of disconsolation. And it just takes observation and compassionate care to help us to understand as much as possible who these birds are, what they want, what they don't want. And we seek in our work to communicate all of these insights and observations and experiences to the public through all of the channels available to us.
Thank you so much for that. Karen Davis, it's been so wonderful speaking with you. You are actually giving me a lot of hope. Usually usually I've been asking my guests what is giving them the most hope right now, but I'll tell you that you are actually giving me a lot of hope in terms of animal welfare. And I also want to thank our listeners for tuning in, and I want to encourage them to go to your website at upc-online.org. That's United Poultry Concerns, upc-online.org, to see some of those beautiful videos. And is your essay, The Social Life of Chickens, online as well?
Yes, it is. And when people go to our homepage, on the left side is a list of topics. So close to the top on the left side is the topic, Thinking Like a Chicken. So if people click on Thinking Like a Chicken, they will see quite a number of articles, what we call philosophical articles, not overly academic, but thought pieces. And if they scroll down a ways, they will come to The Social Life of Chickens. And all they need to do is click it on, and there's the entire article. The entire essay is right there to be read. And it also includes some beautiful photographs of our birds at our sanctuary.
Excellent. Thank you so much. You've been listening to Creating Sanctuaries for Animals, and I'm your host, Yolanda Calderon, and I look forward to talking with you all again soon. Bye-bye.